Hey everybody, it's Barry. I just thought I'd take a moment to let you know a little bit more about the guest today. That is one of my favorite episodes from Industry Standard with Kirk Fox. And if you're not familiar with Kirk, you will be very shortly. But what's really been quite amazing since the pandemic is that everything seems to be going his way. And I think it's going his way because he dedicates himself to being in Los Angeles, to going to the clubs every night, and to honing his acting skills and making sure he's ready for every single thing that comes upon him. He is the kind of person who doesn't really always care about doing stand-up on the road or working at a city somewhere outside of Los Angeles when he knows that he could be here to work out his material in the clubs here and also make sure he's ready and prepared for all roles and auditions in film and television that come his way. And since the pandemic, it seems like things are increasing more and more with his recurring role on the critically acclaimed number one show, according to Rolling Stone, Reservation Dogs, and a show that is the little engine that could, Jury Duty, which single-handedly brought Kirk's IMDb Pro rating down under 200 when it launched. An incredible thing for a role that wasn't really considered to be something that was going to be that special. But Kirk took a leap of faith and went forward and made the right decision as it became one of the biggest hits this television year. And so as you're listening to Kirk, I just wanted to give you a little insight and let you know that there's something extraordinary about this man. He's very, very authentic, original, unique, and he's got a mind that works in a way that isn't like most mortal men. So, without further ado, enjoy Kirk Fox.
I'm rooting for everybody I meet, anyone I come across. I give them good thoughts. I'm always there to nudge them in the right direction if I can. I'll always listen. I'll always tag jokes. I'm happy for anybody who's trying to make a room laugh. I don't pinpoint anyone and say, "Man, I'm happy for anyone that I come across." I'm just trying to love.
Welcome back to another episode of Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. Very excited today. I am here with Kirk Fox, and we are here late at night at the fabulous Industry Standard podcast studios here in Century City. And it's such a pleasure to see him. I'm always happy when I see him, and I am going to give him the introduction that he deserves. I will say this about Kirk Fox. I want to give him the introduction he deserves, but he is a guy who's a minimalist when it comes to his bio. So this will probably be the shortest introduction I've ever given a guest, but it's not because of me. I'm going to blame it on my guest who gave me the condensed Reader's Digest version of his bio and wanted me to keep it at this length because he knows how outrageous and how long and how boring my introductions are. So without further ado, here goes. Kirk Fox is an actor, writer, producer, and award-winning stand-up comedian. Fox was the host of the syndicated daytime conflict talk show The Test
and had a recurring role on NBC's hit comedy series Parks and Recreation as Sewage Joe. His other acting credits include Nickelodeon's How to Rock, NBC's Community, The Carmichael Show, The Mick, and as a series regular on CBS's hour-long dramedy Rush Hour. Fox's extensive television background includes multiple guest appearances on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, Conan, as well as his own Comedy Central Presents special. His experience is not only limited to television, though, as Fox has also built an impressive list of film credits, including Forgetting Sarah Marshall, The Postman, Postgrad, The Patriot, and Wyatt Earp. All right, ladies and gentlemen, a man who reminds me of Sam Elliott in the movie Lifeguard, only with a comedic twist. Please welcome a guy who I love very dearly and I think is amazingly talented, Kirk Fox.
Wow. I was hoping Sam Elliott would be here. Now, I remind you of him because of the mustache or just my my posture?
No, I think you remind me of him because I remember the tagline from that movie, Lifeguard, every woman's summertime dream. And when I look at you, I think to myself, you can have anybody you want.
I don't know about that. I mean, I'm sure there's some that I can't have. But I guess if you're a lifeguard, you can have anybody. If you know CPR, no one's off limits.
It's always a good sign when Kirk Fox takes off one of his signature jackets. That means shit's about to go down.
Where you have me stationed, it's pretty hot. Took a lot to get here. Yeah. I had a run-in with the security. I don't know if you realize how protected you are, but taking off the jacket doesn't really mean
that
much.
Tell you something, if these guys were around in 1963, Kennedy would still be alive today.
They had you protected, except he just put me in the elevator. You were coming down to meet me, and I was already there, so I could have taken him out. I could have taken just about everybody out if I was armed.
I have so many things to ask you.
Well, you can ask. It doesn't mean you'll get any of them answered. I'm just trying to be here. I didn't want to be here.
I know that, and there's reasons for everything, and maybe we'll get into those. I have so many things to ask you. I think the first thing I want to ask you is this. From the moment I met you, I believe it was at the Actors Gang, which was Tim Robbins' tremendous acting troupe here in Los Angeles.
Ned Bellamy. Ned's the other partner with Tim.
I love Ned Bellamy.
He and Tim are pals.
And so I met Kirk there, and there was just something about him when I first met him, and I think he was just starting to think about stand-up.
I think I'd seen you earlier in the night. I saw you in the parking lot of the Comedy Store. You had been up there with Dane. And I said, you know, you should think about me. And I'd been doing comedy, I think, 2 weeks. But I felt good about what I had done. And then I saw you later in the evening.
Which took longer, me to work with you or you to do the podcast? Well,
doing the podcast is probably working before you're working for me. Barry, you've gotten to the point in your career where you don't need to do much heavy lifting.
Apparently, because of my back is thrown out of the
picture. Yeah, but you're not going to go out of your way. You know what? You can guide someone in the right direction if they have questions, but you're not out hunting these days.
I think that's an interesting thing that you're saying. I love these podcasts because they go in all different directions.
Well, this podcast is not about me. This could be an intervention with you.
That could be it, too. That's another thing we could talk about.
I could be here to ask you a lot of questions.
And you will. This is free forum. There's this philosophy always is that if somebody is feeling something or thinking it about you, then it's valid, even if you don't think it's valid. No one knows our work ethics like ourselves. No one knows what we do except ourselves, ultimately, because nobody's around us for all the hours that we're in the earth.
And if someone's lashing out at someone, they're only lashing out at themselves. If anyone's ever attacking management or agents, the truth is they're attacking themselves for not giving their team more to work with. At the end of the day, it always comes down to the talent.
But how come managers and agents don't attack talent?
New day, man. New world.
Does that mean they used to attack talent?
They used to have to. But now there's just no need. You know, if someone wants someone, they'll track them down. comes down to followers and social media and what your last movie did. Tough to sell someone that isn't going to bring in cash. It's just a new world. You know that. Tough to get someone in a room just on talent, unless they're young. If they're real young, I think they'll look at someone, maybe a new surprise.
So that's an interesting thing you said, too. I don't mean to shine a light on us, but obviously, to those of you who don't know out there, Kirk and I work together. After this podcast, he may decide he doesn't want to work with me. But
or I maybe have decided that years ago.
Years ago.
And I still do, because you might be just like everybody else.
That's true.
The fact that I get along with you and you can take a call and maybe get me more money, why would I go to somebody else? When you make me laugh and you're tired and you're like an older version of me, but only a few years older. I just look younger.
Yes, you do. Much better looking, much slimmer, much more athletic. But I think I want to talk about this a little more. So in your opinion, like you just said something earlier, you said, let's face it, Barry, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to do any heavy lifting. You're at that stage. So why does somebody like me then want to work with somebody like you and is excited when he sees you and is happy when he sees you and wants to come to the set and is excited about the kind of work you do? And when you send me a clip, I really genuinely am blown away by it.
We want that which we can't attain. You want me because I don't seem to give you what you need. You don't want to give up on me yet because you feel it's right around the corner of me hitting. I mean, what our relationship is... I mean, what is it?
Well, it's like a lot of different relationships. You have questions about how things can go better.
It all comes down to me. I'm exactly where I put myself. I give you nothing to sell but me, and that's not enough.
When you say you give me nothing to sell but you, does that mean...
It means where I'm at in my career, no one gives a f***.
But you said you give you nobody to sell but you.
I'd like to think that you got to see Kirk Fox. But enough people know me, and there's no one lining up to see Kirk Fox. We see that it's tough to get into rooms. Doesn't matter how good you are. There's 20 guys ahead of me that can open a movie or have had shows, have starred on shows. I'm good when I get there, but it's just tough to get there. I'm 90%.
What does that mean?
It means 9 out of 10 guys are like me. They're great. They're just not getting the shots. So they got to create their own shot. So they're making their own things and they're getting it out there. And you can make a short film. You can get it seen. But I'm exactly where I have put myself. I have no problem with you. I have no problem with Hollywood. You know, my only problem at times is possibly with myself. A little lazy, rather golf, play tennis. Should be writing scripts. Should be writing pilots. But I'm not.
So you get up in the morning, you look in the mirror, you say, I'm lazy.
Well, with regards to career, of course. I should be shooting films, making shorts.
No, I know that. I'm talking about when you get a role.
Oh, when I get a role, of course I dive in. I'm an athlete. I want to win it. I want to know my lines. I want to hit my mark. I don't ever want to slow down a production.
Yeah, you always are 1,000% prepared when you're on a job.
Yeah, when I get a job.
So when you're there, you aren't one of the 90. You're one of the 10%.
Of course, when I'm there.
And every role you've ever done, you've never looked at the footage and said, I really sucked and didn't give any effort. I was lazy with that performance.
No,
that's never happened.
That's not when I'm lazy.
And one other thing that I want to clarify for the audience. When you go on stage... I never feel there's a time when you go on and you're lazy from the moment you say hello, or sometimes you don't say hello till the moment it closes.
I treat every set like it's my last.
So you're just explaining and telling yourself and me why I work with you, because when you're on the set and when you're on the stage, I rarely see anybody who gives more effort to the craft of stand-up and acting than you.
Oh, I agree. It's the hunt of the job that, and lazy may not even be the right word, because I'm at peace. I never go to bed thinking I didn't give my day the best effort. But I'm golfing, I'm playing tennis, I'm just trying to love, I'm just trying to cultivate kindness. But I'm certainly not in the game.
Well, you're working on something right now where you're in the game.
Well, a little.
But there's a lot of people who tried to be in that particular show, and you earned it and you got it over another actor who would be considered pretty reputable.
Well, he was working on another show. He had to choose one. And I'm glad he did. I'm having fun.
I mean, you know, it's a great situation where you go into a role that's named after the person that supposedly they want to have the role. And you go in and they say, you're our guy. And you get there and there's five other people in the waiting room. And you're like, wait, didn't they tell me I was the guy? And then you realize you have to go in and still earn it, even though they told you that you're the guy and you're their favorite. And you have to deliver some nuance that's so special that makes them want to change the character's name to your name.
I mean, some of that might be on point. I mean, when I got the role, they realized they just should call the character Fox.
How often does that happen?
I don't know. I don't work that much.
I think this is important for the audience. This is one of the things that I think is your winning formula. You don't think it's a winning formula.
I definitely have one because I sleep when I want. I can sleep 8 hours. I'm regular.
What's that like?
It's awesome. I dream whatever I want to think about. I dream. I meditate every day. I'm a Buddhist in training. I'm just about love, man. So if I ever come off irritable, I'm certainly not. I just know what I'm talking about with regards to me.
Hey, everybody. I hope you're enjoying this episode as much as I am. If you made it this far and you haven't fallen asleep yet, then you must be the type of person who's serious about having a career in the comedy business. That's why I'm offering you my Blueprint for Success, a one-of-a-kind all-access pass into my knowledge and experience after over 40 years of working with the best of the best in this crazy entertainment industry. I'll tell you all the stories, all the philosophies, give you all the great special guests, and even give you one-on-one private consultations to help you expand, enhance, and skyrocket your comedy career. Just go to barrykatz.com and click on Blueprint for Success to learn more about my groundbreaking digital academy that I've created just for you. With it, we can take your career so far that one day, instead of listening to this podcast, you'll be interviewed on it.
And no one knows you better than you. But what I wanted to share is that your winning formula is I get a fraction of the shots that the other people get. I don't really get a chance to work as much as I want to work. Yet, if anybody listening to this were to go to Kirk Fox's IMDb page, there's 100 different things on there. There's a plethora of television shows. There's probably over 20 feature films that you've been with great people, from Kevin Costner to Jason Segel, who is one of my favorite actors of all time because he's so real all the time.
I'm definitely Hall of Fame. I'm definitely batting 500. My last 10 auditions, I've booked 5 of them, but that's 10 auditions in 2 years.
I mean, movies with Chris Cooper, Mel Gibson, Antonio Banderas directed you, Matt Dillon, Gene Hackman, Michael Keaton. So when people look at your resume, there's comedians out there who are doing comedy, who want to be an actor, and they can't even get arrested.
I know a lot of comedians that have been arrested.
I would bet if anybody were to look at Kirk Fox's IMDb page and look at other stand-up comedians who happen to be actors, and you talk about 90 versus 10, you are definitely in the 10% club or less, that top 10% of comedians who are actors who work and work in significant films and television projects. Parks and Recreation, you know, that's not hanging with Mr. Cooper. You know, working with Heath Ledger, That's not working with dust and diamond. You've worked with amazing people throughout your career. And really, we're talking about 10 to 12 years of time, maybe 15 at the most. Do you tell me how many actors who are comedians who've worked with these people? Very few. Yet, from your perspective, deservedly, you're not getting the opportunities that you want.
And I'll say it again, but that's my fault.
But isn't it frustrating for everybody in any profession when there's the people that generate their own things and are constantly out there creating, whether they're a lawyer or they're a doctor or they're a comedian or an actor, but there's also the examples of the people who never did any of that. And, you know, I don't think Ray Romano was out writing scripts and shooting videos, but he was on a show for 7 years and made $40 million his last year. And as an actor, if you saw the show Vinyl, he was the guy who stood out as an actor. So there's people who have made it. Kevin James wasn't shooting his own videos and writing script after script, but he got cast in King of Queens. Brett Butler wasn't creating things and writing things. She got cast in Grace Under Fire, and she made millions of dollars. Aziz Ansari was doing late night sets at the Comedy Cellar for $10. The guy auditioned for Parks and Recreation. You look at his resume before Parks and Recreation. The formula isn't always that way, but it
There's truly no formula. I'm just talking about... I can only talk about myself, what I know I should be doing. I'm not talking about anyone else. I'm not talking about Roseanne or Ray or we all get there how we get there or we don't get there. I'm just talking about when I say I'm lazy, because this is what triggered that whole thing. It's just how I spend my days. And I'm okay with it. Should I be writing scripts? Yes.
You write every day. You get up and you go to that coffee bean and you write every day.
You know, and when I say I'm writing, listen, I could be writing the same paragraph over and over.
I know you write every day.
Not as much as you think. Writing jokes, not writing scripts, not writing pilots.
Look at your Twitter feed, okay? Every day. And they're funny.
Yeah.
They're always funny.
I agree.
You created a serial killer character on Periscope that had over 3 million people watching.
Well,
3 million.
They wanted me to get that killer. They thought it might be me.
So you have created things.
Not really.
I remember the special night at a really great comedy venue, the Comedy and Magic Club. And I saw you walking around the hallways and... There's people in these rooms that are there occasionally that are geniuses. And the late Gary Shandling was there this one night, and he was trying out stuff, doing his set. And he searched out one person to ask him what they thought of his set, and it was you. What does that tell you?
Well, he was curious what I thought. I think we'd probably been talking about it beforehand. I like Gary.
But he's asking you. He's not asking the other 15 comedians that are there. You know, Kevin Nealon, if you haven't seen Kevin Nealon or any of you people, if you haven't gone to a show, this is one of the most naturally purest funny people out there, nicest guys. There is no comic that I know of, except for you, Kirk, who can break Kevin Nealon. I've seen it over and over again. I've seen the videos. I've heard people talk about it. He does these shows, he sits down, he does interviews, and he does sort of like a Martin Shortish kind of character, Jiminy Glick, where he used to take people down a little bit, but in a snarky way, but Kevin doesn't do it that way.
It's just a Q&A
where he goes toe-to-toe with people, and he always wins, except when he's across from Kirk.
We just have a lot of fun, and I can make him laugh, and that's what it is.
Who else makes him laugh on stage?
I don't watch a lot of them, but he and I are pals, and yeah, I can break him.
You talk about all the things that I love about you as a manager, and you know, you talk about your life. You play tennis, you play golf, and things like that. And this isn't an indictment of me. I don't play tennis for recreation. I don't play golf. I'm not doing these things. I'm getting up at 5:30, 5 o'clock in the morning, starting my day and ending it here with this podcast probably, and then going to edit. But the fact is that you have a wonderful life.
I'm the luckiest guy in the world.
And I always feel like I don't have as wonderful a life because I'm always thinking about how am I going to be able to help the people who I love being around and I love their talent to get where they want to go with my talent and their talent.
Well, you don't have to worry about me because I don't want to go anywhere. I've made no effort to get to some imaginary superstardom.
But when you got cast in Rush Hour, which was a huge show with Bill Lawrence running it and Jeff Engel was one of the producers, and this is another thing that I love about you, and people might think I'm shining this guy's ass, but I've done 190-something of these podcasts.
What took you so long to get to me?
How many times have I asked you to do the show?
Four.
And how many times have you said no?
Four.
All right, so when you got Rush...
I'm surprised I said yes here. You just sounded like you needed one for tomorrow, for Sunday.
Oh, my back was just so bad, and I just knew that you would sympathize with me. But when you got Rush Hour, it was like one line in the pilot. And you believe in that philosophy. There's no such thing as little parts, only little actors.
I just think that every line's important.
But this particular pilot, I got the call. I referred them to me because your relationships are so deep, and I should share that as well.
Every job I've ever gotten has been from Tennis. Tennis is my agent.
He just knows everybody, and he has these relationships that stand the test of time that help him get these great, great jobs sometimes. Not all the time. You didn't have a relationship with these last people. You knew them from the comedy club, but they weren't your buddies.
Well, it turned out one of them was, but I didn't know at the time. So I was just as surprised when I found out that I played tennis with one of them, with Donnie. And 2 years ago, Donnie said, I want to put you in something. I'm like, hey, man, I'm here. And then 2 years later, I used to play tennis with Donnie. So tennis again.
But what I was going to say about the Rush Hour gig, I called you and I said, listen, they want you to do the pilot. I believe they want you to come in, too, and either meet with them or read the line or something. And I'm thinking to myself, this is one line.
You know, I have a photographic memory, so I can tell you exactly how that conversation went, because we were at our little Italian restaurant when you said it's just one line. And it's like, that's all right. I'll turn that one line into something. I would never say I don't want to do it.
So you say you're going to turn that one line into something.
Because once I get on a set, then I can dance. It's getting the job that's tricky. But once I'm there, I'm fine.
So you're there for one line. And for those of you who don't know, what happens is at the end of the pilot, they're calling him in to take pictures with the cast for the cast photo. And he did, I believe, 12 out of the 13 episodes.
10, but... I wanted 12. It was a blast. I love those guys. And it was a good run.
This is where the fate is so bizarre. How many CBS shows do you know of in the past 10 years that have been canceled in 13 episodes? I can't even name any. But unfortunately...
That's part of my magic. You
know? But unfortunately, you get this big primetime show, huge producers, Bill Lawrence, hugely successful, and your show that you're in gets canceled on CBS. But if it goes, then you're...
If it goes, I'm not doing this podcast. That's for sure. It was fun. I had a good time. I got to play a detective. Anytime I can wear a badge and a gun and my mustache, I'm happy. That's why my talk show didn't go, because we had to shave the mustache. Only Dr. Phil could have a mustache, he said. He also said that, you know, we're not selling used cars. You're going to have to shave your mustache.
This is an amazing process, and I hope you elaborate on it. Normally, when you're selling a show in syndication, a talk show, and there's 165 episodes, you got to test people. You got to bring people in. You got to audition them, see how they are. They would call Kirk and say, listen, can you come down to the stage today? We're just doing a little something. And he'd get down there and it's like, could you put the suit on? Yeah, we got an audience in here. We just want to do this thing here.
Well, the great thing was I just played some tennis with Dr. Phil. And we were walking to the car. And he said, you know, Jay, who's his son, Jay McGraw, executive producer of The Doctors. They said, you know, Jay's putting together something, and I think you might be right for it. Come by Paramount tomorrow. We'll throw a suit on you and shave you up and see how you do. Now, I didn't even have a suit, and I ended up borrowing a suit from one of the doctors. And it turned out that, you know, Travis Stork, we were the same size. And the funny thing is when I got the show, they got me a trainer, because I think they figured it was cheaper to build me up than to alter all of those suits. Because I ended up wearing a lot of his wardrobe, Travis. But yeah, I went in there and they had me read a teleprompter, and then they say, come back tomorrow. We'll put some people up.
I don't believe you ever read a teleprompter before.
Not before that. But I couldn't read it, so we put those glasses on. And then after the next day, Phil just said, all right, we're going to go ahead and, you know, make this happen. But I didn't hear about it for the next 6 months. And at one point, I will say that Phil went out on the limb because someone at Tribune, the head of Tribune, wasn't interested in me, said I was a little too smarmy, dirty. And Phil said, well, if you don't want Kirk, then you don't want to be in business with me. And then we shot it.
Those are the kind of people you want on your side.
Yeah. I got no problem with that. But it was loud. It's not a world I want to dance in. I don't like wearing a suit. I like my stash.
If the show had been picked up, would you have asked Phil to get somebody else?
I don't know. I think we would have had to make a few changes. I should have been funnier. I should have been a little more adamant about being myself. You know, there's a I had an earpiece and people kind of feeding me some lines, and I was never comfortable. I'm happier when I can make my own decisions or not make any decisions. Like I say, I'd always rather do nothing. That's the reason I never wanted to do this podcast, was just because I don't want to do anything. It's always uncomfortable.
You don't seem uncomfortable.
Well, once I'm here, but getting here, driving, parking, I just don't want to do anything.
Are you a better actor or better stand-up comedian?
I'm only lately getting good at stand-up. I've always been able to get laughs, but only lately am I getting comfortable. Up until the last year, it was always pretty much a monologue. But I was a good enough actor where I could make it look like I was loose. But I've never comfortable. Never really wanted to be there. Never talking about the shit I want to talk about.
So you're a better actor?
No, I'm not. I wouldn't say I'm pretty good at being myself. I'm not a great actor. I'm good at being who I am. Could I do Shakespeare? Yeah, but it would take a lot of work. I'm good at just delivering a line. I'm great at adding my own lines.
Are there comedians that you run into sometimes that stop into the clubs that you're happy for them? Like the other day I was somewhere, Louis Anderson came in, and I was genuinely so happy for him because obviously there's tremendous ups and downs
in
this business.
I love Louis.
And he gets on a show. We can't get an acting job the way he wants to get it anymore. So he's just relegated to doing stand-up in Las Vegas and sometimes in these rooms where Thunder Down Under was the opening act. And somebody like Louis C.K., just like the people who've gone out of the way for you in your career, who you know, and Zach said, this is the guy to play the mother, and you get that opportunity, and then magic happens. Are there people like that in the clubs that come in that you genuinely are happy for, and there's something about them that you're just rooting for all the time? Or
I got to be honest, I'm rooting for everybody I meet. Anyone I come across, I give them good thoughts. I'm always there to nudge them in the right direction if I can. I'll always listen. I'll always tag jokes. I'm happy for anybody who's trying to make a room laugh. I don't pinpoint anyone and say, man, I'm happy for anyone that I come across. I'm just trying to love. I'm just trying to breathe it in and just just trying to be.
Well, that's another thing about you that I've always found is that I've never met anybody in this career that didn't like you and didn't respect you. And I don't know if you feel like you have enemies or people in the club that you just rub you the wrong way, but I never...
Even if you're being rubbed the wrong way, you're still being rubbed. I have no problem with anybody. And if you have a problem with someone, the problem is with yourself for allowing someone to bother you.
You know, something happened the other day that I want to share with you because you've been great to my kids and you taught them tennis, and I'll never forget that day. And I wondered if I was being a good father or a bad father or what kind of person I was. We were driving up to school and there was construction, and this woman said, "You can't drive up to the classrooms and it's like a long walk." And my older son went toe to toe with her and said, "How come we can't go in there? How come that car got to go? Why won't you let us through?" 8 things in a row trying to get where he wanted to go. My other son just picked up his backpack, his bag, and ignored the difficulty of this woman and just started walking. And I didn't do anything. I didn't reprimand my son. I just observed him. And I thought to myself, God, who am I?
I just think it's easier to be kind. It just takes a lot less work. And I do whatever I can to not have to do too much work. And it's just the way, I was raised. I mean, my dad, every day, you know, get out of bed, stand on your head, take a deep breath and say love. That was his, that was how he greeted his 5 children. Isn't it wonderful? What? When we as Earth planet travelers become aware of our relativity with the great universal life force. That's how he lived, man. He was a handyman, you know, down in Pacific Beach, worked in La Jolla. They all liked him in La Jolla, all the rich people. We never had money, but they liked having him around. And it's the same way I've lived. I've always been country club. I've always liked rich people, and they've always liked having me around. And I think it was just instilled in me, because Pacific Beach, we go up to La Jolla. That's why I play tennis and golf. I'm country club, man, and I'm okay with it, because I can be, you know, I can be broke also. Most of the money I make, I give away. I just would rather give it to others.
I remember you telling me a story where at the coffee meet or wherever it was, you'd bring these beautiful shirts down to this homeless guy.
That was my favorite thing, because Handsome Ron, I saw him actually recently again. I hadn't seen him in a long time. And I gave him a bag of clothes once, real nice bag of clothing. I saw him a few months later, and he had just kept the bag. I was like, "Hey, man, where's all those shirts?" He's like, "Oh, shit. I thought it was just to show me the shape of the bag." And it's like, that makes sense. Because I remember as a kid, we would just, we'd get a box with a toy in there. We would just play in the box. But then I also, one time I gave him $3. And then I saw him a month later, and he came up to me and he handed me $3. I said, "Ron, what's that?" And he's like, "You know, you gave me $3, you know, a few weeks ago or a month ago." I was like, "Hey, man, it wasn't a loan." He's like, "I needed it just to get back on my feet." And I was like, "Are you still homeless?" He's like, "Yeah." I'm like, "What the fuck? Where were you starting? Where were you starting from if it took you $3 to get back to homeless?" Man, that's Handsome Ron. And I hadn't seen him in a while. And the great thing is, this guy's beautiful. But
Do you think a homeless guys get action?
Oh, this guy does. This guy is a masseuse. He's even got a table.
So he takes the girls back to where?
I'm sure he goes there, wherever there. But for a long time when I was playing tennis with Dr. Phil, there was always a lot of food laid out. And he'd always give me a lot to take. And I never told him, but on the way home, there's a bunch of homeless that I fed every night. They'd wait for me at a certain corner. But not all of it, Dr. Phil, but there was so much you made me take that there was no way I could eat it all, especially when I would restock the next day.
You said you've always loved being around rich people, but then rich people love being around you.
Well, because I never ask for anything, and I'm funny, and I'm a nice guy. I've never wanted anything, but it's always tennis, you know, teaching tennis. You know, you give a billionaire a backhand, that's a pretty big thing. But every movie I ever got was through tennis. My first 15 or 20.
Tennis, anyone that came through tennis?
Of course.
You made that movie with Donald.
Yeah, but
Donald Lowe.
But Donald and I were playing tennis, and our friendship, the whole thing came from tennis.
You wrote that movie with him.
Yeah. We've never said I wasn't capable of writing. I wrote Pauly Shore's Dead also. I mean, I can complete a script, but I can write. I have some scripts. Just not big on finishing. My career is the slow play.
As always, this has been Industry Standard with me, Barry Katz. And if you like the show, tell all your friends. And if you don't like the show, tell all your friends.
You get out! All the people love you, 'cause you're going far. Life is for the dreamers, they have all to gain. It's never quite over till it all feels the same. You pick your own poison. Fortune.
Thank you for listening to Industry Standard with Barry Katz. If you'd like more info on our schedule of new episodes or how to reach Barry through Twitter, Facebook, or email, go to BarryKatz.com. Before you leave, please take a moment to subscribe to our podcast, leave a comment, and rate it, even if you think it blows. Thank you for your support, and have a great day.
Hey, everybody. Let me remind you one more time about my new blueprint for success. It's a project I've spent months and months working on just to help you jumpstart your comedy career and beat the competition. Whether you want to do stand-up, sketch, improv, acting, writing, producing, directing, radio, social media influencing, or even if you want a career behind the scenes as a manager or agent, Blueprint for Success will give you all the tools you need to take your career to the highest levels. With exclusive interviews, my top 50 commercial-free episodes from Industry Standard, one-on-one coaching with me, and unprecedented access into my knowledge and experience from over 40 years in this crazy business, I guarantee you that with Blueprint for Success, you'll become the creator you've always dreamed of becoming. No one's asking me to do this. I want to do it because I want to help you become truly undeniable. So just go to BarryKatz.com, click on Blueprint for Success, and start your incredible journey today. I truly can't wait to work with you to help you change the trajectory of your comedy career forever.